I've got Simon Baloyi, the CEO of Sasol, with me this morning. And Simon, we've got lots to talk about. Having attended the B4SA call on Friday, where business leaders were giving feedback on the work streams and what you are doing as a collective, as private sector, to really galvanize positivity across the South African economy, across the South African landscape. I wanted to start with your stream, which effectively encompasses the energy landscape. Can you give me a sense of how you are feeling about the energy landscape in South Africa and the difference that the private sector is making?
Morning, Brennan. Thank you for having me. Yeah, you should recall in 2023, that's when the NECOM intervention was started. The state of the country's energy landscape at that moment. We were up to, in some certain instances, 12 hours of load shedding, which was quite a challenge for not just for businesses, but for the South African consumers and population at large. So I was really encouraged, firstly, by the president to bring business into the fold to become part of the solution, not the armchair critic, but being part of the solution. And I'm feeling quite positive in terms of what we've seen. I mean, if you look at the momentum that we've garnered over the last 3 years or so, load shedding, I know I'm not going to declare that, but I'll say the tough days, structural load shedding seems to be slowly getting behind us. I'm sure, Eskom, Dan and the team still have some work to do before they can make their declaration together with the minister. But we'll be out of those 12-hour load shedding spells, which was quite tough for everyone. And the reforms have accelerated. If you look at where we are, the ERA has been promulgated. We've seen lots and lots of renewable energy, both by PPAs and big entities themselves and rooftop solar. We've seen a massive uptake of renewable energy through the reforms. Of course, now I have to deal with what I call the low-hanging fruits are gone. And now we must deal with the tough challenges. And one of the tough, challenging issues is the electricity distribution industry, the EDI, and the SAWEM, which is the South African wholesale electricity market. I think we need to stretch those two out. But this priority is top of mind for all the role players in the infrastructure. So if you ask me, I'll say I'm very positive and optimistic in terms of the momentum that we've garnered. However, we must never lose that momentum. We must build on it and advance the reform course.
Of course, the energy stream is just one stream in a number of areas of focus for B4SA. How do you feel about the broader context of South Africa right now? Because a lot of people listening to this interview are feeling very despondent. And we need to galvanize, I suppose, that level of positivity that the business contingent is seeing, despite the fact that we've got the current Mdlanga Commission going on, a lot of different exposés happening on crime and corruption. So perhaps, Simon, I know that you're very specific in the energy work stream, but just talking to that broader work that you're doing and why the positivity from business?
Brody, you recall that there was three key interventions. There was one on energy. Energy is the foundation or the bedrock, I think, of any economy. Then there was an intervention on logistics. We saw the work that has been happening, especially at Transnet for transport and logistics, because that allows our economy almost to pump in full cylinders. If we can export, that allows us to earn the much needed foreign currency. And there's also an intervention on crime and corruption where the governance, in general, has to be improved. So if you ask me, and that's my message to all the fellow countrymen, I said something this good as what we have now in terms of the country, the people, the landscape, the geography, the minerals, the good climate, it is worth preserving. So what does that mean? That means all of us must be willing to do work. So from a business point of view, we want to partnership with government. And from where I am, I'll start from the elections. When the elections happened in May and there was no outright winner, all of us were concerned in terms of what was going to be the outcome. And I must commend the political principles, across the board for formulating and coming up and forming a government in 14 days. And we're all, of course, excited that we formed the government. However, like they said, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So for me, it's all about delivery now. So I think what we need to do, I mean, as business, as civil society, and even as government, we must all come together and be obsessed on delivery rather than, it is from my point of view, I mean, talking. I mean, this country is so good at coming up with perfect plans and lots of talk shops. I think for me, we must just act. We already have lots and lots of good plans. There's already momentum. The partnership between government and B4SA shows that momentum, that if we work together, we can start getting traction. And that's what we need to do. We need to work. It might not be perfect. We can self-correct. I think for me, where the country finds itself in terms of growth, should be unacceptable to all of us because this low growth leads to unemployment. And then the inequalities then tends to increase because of that.
Let's go now to your journey at Sasol. It's been a long one, right? And I want you to give our audience a little bit of visibility into your own long journey leading to the CEO spot.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a very, very long journey. It's more than 2 decades I've been at Sasol. I might look young, but I'm not. So it's been a very long journey. I was a Sasol bursary holder, and I started working in Secunda in the early 2000s. And from there, as a young engineer, recently graduated. Secunda, for me, I remember when I entered that facility, it was fantastic. You can see it's an engineering marvel. I mean, the whole facility sits on more than 13, soccer or rugby fields, depending on which sport you prefer. So it's a massive facility. And with mines that span over an area of more than 60 kilometers around that facility. So, incredible facility. I started working there as a young engineer. And I got a chance being blessed with firstly, the opportunity to work in Secunda and Sasolburg to get some overseas responsibility and various roles. I started as an engineer, then I also became a plant manager, went into general management. I've been a vice president, then executive management in Secunda as well. And then got the opportunity to also now join the group. After I think a career that for me, I call it a blessing. And maybe if there's one thing that I really, really want to call out is the people of Sasol. From the very first day that I entered this facility, I was received with warmth. I still recall, the artisans, and the people that taught me the plant. And you learn, the Uom, Niels Venter, Torin Brown, Joseph Budeli, Azaya Mahlangu. Those were just ordinary people that were so passionate. And that passion, to tell you the truth, is what inspired my management journey, because I saw all these people giving their all into making this company what it is. And so for me, my journey at Sasol is a journey of people. My line managers, various line managers, to my very first line manager, Paul Willem Smith, who really, almost poured himself into me. And for me, when I saw such humanity in a company that has got so much brilliance, it's something that also inspired me and pushed me to become my best and to also contribute. So it's been a long journey. But for me, it's a journey of our people. It's a journey of the Sasol people. And I stand here where I am because of all of them.
Talk to me about the leadership challenges that you've had in the C-suite, because it wasn't easy when you came in, right? There were a lot of expectations from investors who felt that there had been shareholder value destruction, and things changed. The trajectory changed actually this year.
Yeah, thank you. I recall the first headline. My very first radio interview, the journalists, titled Baptism by Fire. And they asked me, are you ready to go through this baptism? And I could recall and said, yeah, I do. I'm cognizant of the challenge ahead of us. But I felt quite calm because of the great people. I've had the honor and the opportunity to work across Sasol. And I think that gave me knowledge of knowing what was inside our people and what we can do collectively as Team Sasol. Of course, all of us, the last 5 years have been tough. So we were also not proud. And you can even extend that to almost 10 years. So it's been almost a tough 10 years for the investors, for our people, and various interventions, I mean, came and left, but the trajectory was always going downwards, which we signaled that we had to do something different. So for me, one of the key challenges that I found was, well, I'll call it a mind shift change to shift the team's mindset from almost activity to value-based. Because, I mean, when you come into a strong organization like this, with all these competencies that it has and with all these hardworking and determined people, sometimes when you don't get the results, it's because of the focus. You have to differentiate between activity, I mean, for the sake of activity, and value-based activities. And that's what we did. So that's the first, I mean, my mindset or mind shift that we had to make. And secondly, it's all about making sure that we remember that we have one bottom line. We are one Sasol, and we have to collaborate and work together. And I mean, for instance, when we did the Capital Markets Day, it was a testament of that. For all the Sasol people coming together, telling our story, telling the story of how we want to see the organization and what our role and part was in that. So for me, that's what we had to do. And I think we've shown after the first year the trajectory that the organization is taking. And I'm very pleased that we're going to build on that momentum. We gave very, very clear, I mean, targets for our CMD, what we want to see in the near and the midterm and the long term as well. And the team is, I'll say, it's at full pace. We're at full pace, making sure that we can deliver what we promised.
One of the key questions investors repeatedly ask you, of course, is how you balance the decarbonization journey with profitability. Perhaps you can give us a little insight on that front.
I think for the key, and this was also a different way of looking at it. It was all about, I mean, let's provide clarity of what is that we're going to do and what is that we're not going to do. So we're very clear that our South African entity is predominantly coal-based, and the coal that goes into the products that we will keep. So we'll keep on, I mean, using coal into the products. However, we didn't move away from our greenhouse gas reduction commitment. We had to find an innovative way of still meeting that. And to that end, you remember we said we will increase renewable energy, and we've done it. So, and we're busy with that program. We will also use market offsets. We're busy with that. And why do you think so? Because for me, it's all about the balance. It's a balance between the needs of the environment, the balance between the viability of the entity, and the balance between the social and economic conditions. Because Sasol is a major employer. I mean, if you think directly and indirectly, there's 2 million people that depends on the entity. Because, I mean, we bring services into the organization, and then we make products, and not all our products are final products. Some of them are actually input into other industries to continue adding value on and making their products. And that is a net multiplier. So we have to find a clever way of reaching our target. And that's what we found. And that's what we presented at CMD, where we keep the coal that we need for products. However, we reduce the coal that goes into electricity, because that coal we can, I mean, substitute with renewable energy. We're doing that. We then, I mean, work on market offsets, because carbon credits, that's long-term and sustainable. We do that. And I think that balance allows us to balance decarbonization and the need to become what I call a force for good. So that's what we do, because we have to find that perfect balance. And our story, remember, is not a unique story. It's the story that this country must traverse. I mean, as I speak to you, we're sitting in a country that uses coal as an energy source, where 80% of our energy is coal. So you can't just wake up and switch it off, but you also cannot yet refuse to transform. So you have to do both. And that's what we always talk about, the additionality principle, to say maintain what you have and add sustainable products and sustainable and renewable energy on top of.
Can you give us a little more insight into the international business, largely aggregated as the chemicals business?
Yeah, our international chemicals, you should recall during CMD, we actually gave that business, I mean, a very ambitious target to lift the EBITDA from $280 million to $850 by 2028, or hopefully a billion by towards the end of the decade. So you can see that's like a fourfold to fivefold improvement in that business. I mean, taking a step back, because that business is predominantly, I mean, if you look at the majority of the people and the assets, is in the United States and Germany. We do have assets in China. We do have assets in Eurasia and Europe as well. However, the majority of this business is concentrated in the United States and in Lake Charles and also in Germany, in Brunsbüttel and in Mal. And what we do here, we take, I mean, ethylene and I mean, in the United States, we make polyethylene. And then we crack it first, crack ethane into ethylene. Then you can make, I mean, polyethylene, but we also take the ethylene and make alcohol, I mean, detergents, alcohol and surfactants. And that's what we also do in Germany. So we've got these various, I mean, alcohol and detergents that goes into various applications, both for, I mean, personal care or essential care. And it goes into technical formulations. It goes into industries as well. So that's what this business is. It's a very, we look at the asset base. It's a fantastic asset base. I mean, if you look at the US asset, for instance, it's an advantage cracker. It's a 1.4 million ton, 1.5 million ton cracker. So you get advantage of low cost. So with that in mind, I had a firm belief that we should be able to turn that business around. And then we then embarked, I mean, firstly on what we call the self-help measures in terms of what we can do in that business to improve it. So we've done a restructuring and that will continue. We also closed some of the units that were negative gross margins. So they were not contributing to the cash, free cash flow generation of that business. And we've mothballed those one. And that was the Goubert plant and the phenolic plant. And we did that both in Germany and in the US and in Italy as well. So we took those decisive steps to mothball units that were draining cash. So we've seen an improvement in the first year where the EBITDA improved from 280 to $411 million. And then for this year, FY26, we then made the prediction a guidance that we should end between 450 to 550. And I think, yeah, we're confident that we should be able to deliver in that range, in improving that business.
Again, another question that investors fire at you as the management team is the debt level in terms of Sasol and what remedial action you are taking on lowering the debt across the board.
Yeah, our net debt, in FY25, at the end of FY25, closed, I mean, at 3.6, which was slightly ahead of where we wanted to be at 4. So I'm pleased about that. However, let me step back and give, guidance that what we want to do with our debt is to make sure that our net debt to EBITDA is between 1 and 1.5 times. So we want to reduce it to $3 billion. We think if we can keep it sustainably there, we should be fine. And we are. I mean, our focus is not through. I know some people have asked us before, are you going to sell assets to pay down your debt? And we said, no. I mean, we are going to, pay down the debt through free cash flow generation. And that's why the focus, I mean, we gave very, very clear targets for both the international chemicals and our South African business in terms of what we wanted to see in terms of EBITDA and all of that being converted into free cash flow generation to enable us to pay down our debt. So we gave during CMD, we were hoping and that we should be, I mean, between 27 and 28, we should be in that range of less than $3 billion in terms of our net debt. And I think where we ended in FY25, we are on course, I mean, slightly ahead. I mean, of course, the macros will also be something that we have to take into account. But yeah, we're pleased with the steps that we've taken during the first year, and we'll build on that momentum to hopefully, I mean, make sure that we can reduce our debt to $3 billion. Because that for us, I mean, it's a comfortable place where we think we can sustainably operate our entity.
Significantly at the mercy of the oil price and the exchange rate. Do those two elements keep you awake? I mean, there's nothing you can do about them, but they must weigh heavily on the management team.
We're always watching those, but our focus is on the controllables. So as a management team, what we've done, we have hedged, both oil and the exchange rate. But this is to not for income purposes, but to protect our balance sheet and our debt covenants. So we do have, a hedge, a floor of $60 on the oil price. And we also have, a cap and a collar on the exchange rate. I mean, 20% around the 20 to 30% around the 17.50 mark. So we've done that. I mean, that's what we can do. However, the focus is making sure, you saw where we ended last year on in terms of free cash flow generation. Our focus is to make sure that notwithstanding the macros, everything that we can control, we should control. So the focus on our own cash fees cost is there. You saw year on year, we reduced. I mean, our cost was actually increased by 1%. So we were managed to contain inflation. We're going to continue with those measures. The reduction in terms of our overall headcount, we had a 3% reduction. So we've continued to freeze vacancies. I mean, we do, if we need to bring critical vacancies, we do that. So critical vacancies we can appoint. But we always, every time we have a vacancy, we thoroughly cross-examine to make sure that we need it. Can we reorganize ourselves better? Can we improve? And then can we use technology to help us reduce our staff complement? And we're going to continue doing that. So the cost, which is under our control, we're going to focus on it. I mean, production volumes, that's a lever that we're working hard on. You saw during the results, we announced that coal quality was one of those things between coal quality and gasifier usability was holding us back. And during the result, I announced that we actually finalized the destoning plant, which is going to help us improve the coal quality. So that was commissioned successfully. We are confident in terms of what we promised. The team, I mean, understand that we need to deliver what we promised. Because as we always say, we want to build, I mean, our credibility back again through performance.
You are headquartered in Johannesburg. And while I was participating in the B4SA call, as I said, on Friday, it was interesting that the body has taken on Johannesburg as an additional work stream and remedial action around Johannesburg. Give me a sense of what your high-level thoughts are around Johannesburg's infrastructure. Again, it's relevant because you're headquartered there. And the inroads that private sector can make in changing the game for what should be the vibrant hub of South Africa.
Johannesburg is the economic heartland of the economy. We saw the data. If you look at the economy of the province, even it was bigger than Ukraine's economy pre-war. So it shows you how massive this economy is. Just the Joburg economy as well. I mean, it's comparable, if not larger than economies of some countries like Kenya, for example. So this is not, something that we can all give up on. So for me, let's start with what you asked, the state of Johannesburg now. We all have to be honest. I live here. I do most of my morning runs around Johannesburg. The infrastructure decline is visible. It's now visible to the proverbial naked eye. You can see that the infrastructure is declining. For us, in terms of what we've demonstrated in the partnership with government on logistics, transport and logistics, energy, crime and corruption, I think we've demonstrated that we do as business have the skills, because for me it's a partnership, so it's not us taking over. Business will never ever do the work of government. Business has some skills, government has some skills, and we both have unique and different accountabilities and responsibilities, but there's nothing wrong where we can share best practices to have a good outcome for all of us. There's no need to wait for a decline to go beyond the point of no return and want to intervene. It's better that we can all partner early and make sure that we can restore the infrastructure of our beloved city to what it was previously.
And Simon, just in terms of Sasol forward-looking next milestone for you as an executive team?
Yeah, we are year one. We are now, you remember we gave CMD commitments and clarity on targets for FY 26, 27, 28. For us, that's our immediate focus. We've also given, 2030 targets and beyond that in terms of what we wanted to see in terms of renewable energy uptake, what we wanted to see in terms of where our debt is. So for us, immediately we need to firstly deliver what we promised. We have to do that because strengthening the foundation of this company is there. I mean, my view is almost a license to a much better future and value creation. So that's our immediate focus. We're working hard to make sure that we can deliver that. However, I mean, our focus and our scope goes way beyond that. So what we're doing, we're also setting up the entity and the organization for long-term success. This month, I mean, tomorrow in actual fact, we're celebrating 75 years. I mean, it's 75 years of resilience, innovation, and incredible contribution to the South African and global economy. And we want to continue doing that. So we will be focused on making sure we deliver our commitments on CMD. And I mean, making sure that we also provide, the market with clarity in terms of how the organization looks like 2025 or not.
So I know you broke down CMD as Capital Markets Day early on the conversation, just bringing those that aren't familiar with the acronym into the conversation. What do you want your legacy to be? I know it's early days. There's a lot ahead of you, but what do you want your legacy to be?
That's a deep question because we're just starting. But if I were to sum it up for me, maybe two words. I mean, the first one is significance for others. I'm a person that's driven by making sure that I can make a difference. So I want to make a difference to the people of Sasol, to this country, and I also want to make a difference. I mean, at a global landscape, I mean, however small it can be, I just want to make sure I'm significant for others so that my life at least, I mean, matters. And for Sasol, for me, it's all about, I mean, I'll come to the second word, which is restoration. It's to make sure that firstly, I mean, I can restore, the pride, I mean, in our people in terms of who we are and what we stand for. I mean, restore the confidence, I mean, in our shareholders and restore the trust in our customers by being an organization that's customer centric, value focused, and is propelled by inspired people who are happy to be here every day. So if I can leave that as a legacy, I'll be pleased.
So ending on that deep note, Sun, thank you so much for sitting down with us. Sun Baloyi is the CEO of Sasol.
Thank you, Brownie.